This is CliffCentral.com.
You know what? I realized the other day, I actually really like music from every single generation. Like, I was listening to Cole Porter from like the 1920s the other day. Mm. I thought, what a great musician. And you listen to 70s stuff like Jeff Lynne.
Yeah. That's why I don't like it when people say, what era of music do you like or what type of music? No. I really like all music. There may be some that I listen to more than the others.
Yeah.
But there are very few types of music I don't like. Like, I don't think I could listen to didgeridoo stuff for the whole day.
Yeah.
Or any. I think if you're interested in what genre and you only like one genre of music, you just haven't had enough time and you just haven't learned enough about music because there's so much good stuff out there. Mm. All right. Gareth, you chop. Orbison was never blind. Just had the sunglasses as a trademark. Okay, well.
I
thought he was blind. But then I'm willing to be corrected. Thank you very much, you chop, Carla. People even now think Roy Orbison was blind. He wasn't. He began wearing trademark dark glasses in 1963.
Ah, yes. The sunglasses led some people to assume he was blind.
Okay, sorry. I thought he was blind. So he didn't know what a pretty woman looked like.
So he didn't know, yes.
Yeah. This is from Tumelo, says, the song got me line dancing like a fool in my flat, but I love it. Oh, beautiful. Very nice.
Line dancing.
Don't be embarrassed. Don't ever be embarrassed. Okay, thank you for your... What is this? What your number? Okay, as in the number that we've just given here. This is Bianca. She says, my monthly drug dealing trip, I am a... I have been sitting for so long that I had a cramp in my bum. Thank you for a great show. Bianca, the medical rep. She sells medicines. Yes. So she's not a drug dealer, dangerous drug dealer.
I really didn't know where that was going.
Live loud to the power of Clip Central with Gareth, Leanne, and Sia in the morning. Live loud to the power of Clip Central.
That's Eddie trying to be creative. All right, Eddie, don't ever do that
again. See, the problem with listening to voice notes before you vetted them.
That is so nostalgic. I love that shit. Reminded me, that electric last song reminded me of, ooh, nobody knows me.
That's
the Elton John song.
Yes.
But, Gareth, how are you single? I don't understand. Great taste in music, intelligence.
Yeah.
You're my hero.
Well, you know,
he farts a lot.
Like, there is a choice.
That's what he doesn't want to tell you.
There's a matter of choice in this whole situation that people seem to completely obviate.
Yeah.
I actively like being single. I know that's hard for some people to imagine, but I do like going home to my own house where there's no one else.
It's such a weird question. It would be like me, and actually I'm quite guilty of it. I say things like, why are you married?
Yeah.
Why are you having children?
Yeah, and look, I don't mind the question. It's a very valid one because most people's default is to be with somebody, and that's cool. I'm going on this cruise now with my business partner, and we travel very well together.
Mm.
And it's like a really fun trip. In February, I went away with two married couples and one or two other single people, and it was fantastic. I change it up. I was in Durban this weekend. I went on my own.
Mm.
So I had lots of friends there. It was terrific.
For me, it's funny when I get reminded about my relationship status. For example, you know, I have my friends who know me, you guys know me, my family who knows me, and that's all good and well.
Right.
But when I went to the wedding I went to recently in Cape Town,
mm-hmm.
I had three different people ask me, oh, are you here alone? Oh, you're not here with someone? I'm just here alone. That's all. Yeah, but then, I guess it's also the scenario.
I suppose if you're the kind of person who's worried about what other people think of you or any of that stuff, then it'll bother you to be asked those questions. And
I did have a moment. I'm like, what does this mean?
Alone.
But then
so
I started
alone.
Drinking. Then I was fine.
No, I can imagine nothing worse than waking up next to the same person every day. I would. I know I'd hate them after 5 days. And they'd hate me probably. I'm more than willing to admit that part of the reason that I've chosen to be single is because I can be very unpleasant, and I'm trying to save someone the pain of having to learned to dislike
me. Shane Carruth.
No, no, but it's part, no, it's a very small part of it, but it's something worth considering.
It's like, awareness.
I would, awareness. I would immediately get irritated with someone else if they were in my life 24/7, and they would probably get irritated with me, but at least I'm mature enough to acknowledge that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, for me as well, it brings up the feeling of being in love, but to the point where things become weird. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, when you get to the point where you start worrying about why the person hasn't come home yet, or where they are, mm-hmm. or perhaps are they cheating, or maybe this is the end, I'm going to go through heartbreak. That's the fear for me that makes me think I'd rather just not partake, thank you.
Yeah, well,
we all have our thing, you know?
Do what you got to do. Yeah, yeah. It's really, I mean, there is no hard and fast answer for everybody. Do your thing.
Mm.
So there's the answer to your question. Thank you very much. Who was that? Let me just give them acknowledgement here. This is from, God, listen to this. Where is that clip? It's just gone missing.
Hmm.
How bizarre.
Went to the listened to pile.
Yeah. Sorry, I can't even give you credit for it.
Oh.
How unfortunate. Oh, here it is. Okay. Her name is A.S., basically.
Oh.
I do understand. I just don't ever want to worry about you being lonely. Oh, please.
There's a difference between lonely and alone.
I've been alone a lot. I've never been lonely. And I don't get bored. It's the weirdest thing. I've never, ever sat there and gone, now I'm bored.
Mm.
There's a billion things that I'd like to do. It's just, different.
There is one thing, one aspect to think about, and that's called bearing witness. We may not need to be with someone all the time, but it is nice to have someone bear witness to the things that you're doing in your life.
Sure.
But by the very essence of this podcast, you're doing that.
Well, that's true, but I've also got, I'm really close to my family, love them all to pieces. I've got these two little nephews who came to visit me yesterday unannounced again. This is the second time they've done it. They just come and knock on the door.
So cute.
And then, they want to, hang around with me, which is cool. So I've got lots of that kind of stimulation going on. And therefore, there's even less need. You know, there's a massive difference between want and need. Mm. I think want is fine. Want is probably quite healthy because it keeps you motivated, keeps you moving forward, keeps you doing new things. Need is sometimes pathological.
Mm.
Need comes from a bad place. It's you trying to fill in a space that you feel is waning and open and desperate to
be
filled.
Yeah, let's be clear, that's emotional need. Yeah. We have needs like oxygen and food and
all those. So you can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
That you got to deal with. All right, are we going to talk to John Webb? Is he on the line?
Okay. In a couple of minutes.
I think what's really interesting at the moment is that there's something in the news going on right now. Even though Chernobyl was in the incident and the areas in the Ukraine, there are fears that Russia is covering up a new Chernobyl-type accident.
I saw this in the news last week.
Yes.
I think we might even have covered it on a day you weren't here. But there was an accident in northern Siberia, and it did get me thinking about Chernobyl suddenly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it kind of fits in that we're speaking to him right now.
Well, the reason I'm thinking about it mostly is because of the TV series, which everybody was talking about.
So, so good.
It was brilliant.
I mean, obviously the incident was not good.
Yeah.
But it was just so good that it was brought to light in a way that we could understand. Because there's so many bits and pieces of it lying around in Wikipedia articles.
Yes.
Nothing's been put together like this was.
If you really want to see some interesting stuff, go and look up Google images around Chernobyl. You'll see amazing things. That really, it's just unbelievable that people put themselves at risk to take some of these photographs. Now, John Webb's no stranger to the South African media industry. He's had stints at media powerhouses like, or he was a reporter for 702. He worked on several assignments with Carte Blanche. His days are now spent in Europe. He's working on a wide variety of projects, including the likes of a movie set where he currently joins us from. He's on Skype. There's something that I want to catch up with him about, though. He was in Chernobyl, as we discussed just a second ago, and we're going to find out what he was doing there. He left South Africa in 2018, He still contributes to Carte Blanche every now and then, World Wide Web, W-E-B-B, and he gives us a perspective through interesting, pertinent, beautifully done inserts for viewers. And he continues to file multiple absorbing inserts and interviews from the UK, where he's mostly based in Ireland, I think, at the moment, also across Europe. He's a producer, presenter. He's managed to successfully give us a whole mix of very 21st century media stuff. John Webb, how are you, sir?
I'm really good, Gareth. Nice chatting to you. Good morning.
Yeah, good to see you. I can't help keeping up to date with you thanks to social media and seeing the interesting things that you're up to. And I saw the other day you caught my eye with the Chernobyl visit that you did.
Yeah, Chernobyl, quite a place, Gareth. I was there for 3 days in total, got back towards the end of last week, and I'm, to be frank, still trying to digest exactly what I saw. It's a very odd place.
Is it quite creepy and scary, like the set of a horror movie? Because it's abandoned mostly. I mean, you can go in there as a tourist, but you almost be chaperoned around, and you have to probably, if it's still the way that I saw it in a documentary that was produced some time ago, you have to make sure that you have Geiger counters or at least some kind of instrument on you that can measure the radiation. How does it work? How did you get in?
Well, it's quite a lengthy process, Gareth. You have to make an application to the agency responsible for the management of the power plant, and that has to be submitted 10 days prior to you leaving.
Wow.
But once that is in place, as you say, you're assigned, that guide is an expert, hopefully, in all things relating to Chernobyl, and has to accompany you for the entire time that you're there. Mm-hmm. As you also rightly say, you're given what is known as a dosimeter, which you wear around your neck, which measures the dose of radiation that you're exposed to for the duration of your stay. It almost averages it out, and you hand that back to them at the end of your stay, and they download all the information contained in that dosimeter. And if there's anything to worry about, I'm hoping they get in touch with you.
Yeah,
That's my expectation. And you travel around with a Geiger counter. You're advised to stay away from the so-called hotspots, the most dangerous parts of Chernobyl, where the radiation levels are still high. And Gareth, they are still high. It has to be emphasized that there are some very dangerous places still in Chernobyl. So the idea is that you stay with your guide, you stay on the designated paths, the designated routes, and hopefully you should be fine. As far as the feeling of the place, Gareth, well, that, to be honest, is the most difficult part to digest, because it still, for all intents and purposes, is a functioning site of sorts. There are about 2,000 people that work there. Mm-hmm. They're in the process of decommissioning, obviously. They have about 100 years now to figure out what to do with Reactor 4, which is still highly, highly radioactive, and it's just been covered with that very impressive-looking sarcophagus, which has a lifespan of 100 years, so that's how much time they have to figure things out. And then as for the rest of the place, the cities, the towns, the settlements that were there prior to the accident, there were about 131 in total. Almost all of those are abandoned. There are a few that aren't. And it is very eerie, very haunting, quite difficult to come to terms with, and I suppose on a moral, ethereal type of level, you do wonder whether or not being there as a sort of voyeur, as a tourist, as a journalist, is the right thing. But, that's probably – I mean, I suppose the answer to that question is yes, it is the right thing, as long as you approach it with the right attitude.
Well, they say that radiation is going to be there for 5,000 years or something like that. Where are the places that you're not allowed to go, and what are the most dangerous places around Chernobyl? Obviously, inside that sarcophagus of Reactor 4, no one's allowed in there, right?
Yeah, no, you're not allowed in there unless you're a worker. And even then, there are places inside the old Reactor 4 that you're not allowed to go. The most dangerous is a place, as far as I understand it, Gareth, that houses what is known as the Elephant's Foot.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a very sort of strange, alien-like stalagmite that is a sort of a conglomeration of various types of highly, highly, highly radioactive material. It's I believe about 3 meters in diameter. It's just this very strange looking elephant's foot type shaped object. That, as I say, is a conglomeration of various substances, but it is highly radioactive.
It actually came from the molten core.
Exactly. And if you stood next to it for any period of time, the fact of the matter is that you would be dead. Interestingly, the story goes that when they were trying to figure out what it was exactly, they couldn't get their automated robots close enough to extract samples from this elephant's foot. And so what they did in the end was that they got an army sniper to fire shots at this thing, and then they grabbed hold of some of the fragments and they tested those. Wow. And the I'm not sure if it's an urban legend or not, Gareth, but it's reported that the guy who did the shooting actually died. So sure. I mean, that would be probably one of the most radioactive sites outside of the reactor. Prior to the accident, there was a significant area of pretty dense forest almost all around the reactor, about 2 square kilometers around the old reactor, in fact, around the whole nuclear power plant. And then immediately after the accident, it was exposed to an enormous dose of radiation that killed it almost instantaneously. So over a period of time, that entire forest died. All the pine needles, it was a pine forest, all the pine needles turned red. And the people who were responsible for the cleanup after the accident claimed that at night you could see this forest glowing red, It was called the Red Forest. It's since been chopped down and new trees have grown in their place. But when you drive through what would have been the Red Forest, Geiger counters go absolutely ballistic. It's still highly radioactive. And there are similar areas. So where they, for example, left all the vehicles that were involved in the cleanup operation, again, highly radioactive, and they were just dumped in a sort of mechanical graveyard, if you like. And that area, too, is very, very radioactive.
Good heavens. It sounds amazing. Now, did you get to visit the town of Pripyat as well?
Pripyat is out of mirth, really, because it's a sad place, Gareth. It was a made-to-order, tailor-made Soviet town. It was built specifically to house the people who worked at the nuclear power plant and their families, 50,000 in total at the time of the accident. In fact, closer to about 49,000. It had 2 swimming pools, 15 kindergartens, 5 schools, a yacht club, believe it or not, that was quite a thing in the Soviet era, and now it is empty. It is a shell of a place. The buildings are derelict. They are overgrown. Nature is starting to reclaim its place in that area. And again, you know, you can walk through, for example, one of the old schools and see abandoned gas masks, the windows all open, glass shattered across the floor, little toys here and there. Mm. Likewise, in the swimming pool, the pool is still there. It's empty. There's a big sort of 3-meter diving board, which I'm sure at the time was a lot of fun, but now is just a reminder of a life that is, you know, that is no longer possible there. It's a very strange place, but I would say probably on a whole, the most fascinating part of the trip.
You know, it just strikes me as such a weird thing to have on your list of places you want to go to, but I'm a little bit jealous because after I watched that fantastic drama that they put together for, I think it was HBO, that's now received some of the biggest viewership figures in all of television history. It feels to me like some places on Earth are just fascinating, not just because of what happened there, but because of the fact that there haven't been humans actively participating in the events of that place for so long since. And it really, in so many ways, it's almost like a time capsule of communism and of... Because Pripyat was, and you just described it very well, but it was kind of a model village, right? It was a model town.
Yeah, it was in many ways. I mean, I dare say to call it the pride of the Soviet Union would be an overstatement, but it was a place of which the Soviets were very proud, because actually it was quite an impressive looking place, I'm told at the time, and. And I think it would have been, when you compare it to other parts of the Soviet Union, quite a pleasant place to live. I mean, interestingly, the Ukraine, as an example, gets very good summers, nice warm weather. So I think if you lived an outdoor lifestyle and you used all the facilities, it would have been a great place to live. And well, I mean, under the circumstances, if you know what I'm saying, Gareth. But for that reason, it is an interesting place to visit, but it wouldn't be on top of, I guess, most tourists' list of places to be, because it is an unusual place to visit and there is an element of danger involved. But what Chernobyl represents, amongst many other things, is a destination as part of what people are now calling dark tourism. Mm. There is a fascination, I think, amongst a lot of people with places like this that have an interesting history where there is an element of danger involved. You know, that can't be overstated either, but it can't be understated. And I think it's a very interesting twist in the sort of the way people try and experience the planet as tourists. And I think you're starting to see more and more of this type of thing. People bored with their sort of middle class lifestyles in the comfortable places in which they live, and they kind of yearn for a little bit of risk and a little bit of danger and a little bit of fascination. And Chernobyl represents that.
Where are you going next? North Korea, Lake Karachay. I mean, where would you like to go and poison yourself next, John?
You know, it's interesting, Gareth, because this story reminded me of another that I did quite some time ago when I covered the outbreak of the Marburg virus in Angola.
Wow.
The Marburg virus is very similar to Ebola, not quite as severe, but not far away. The outbreak was in a town called Wij, north of Luanda. It was very difficult to get to at the time, isolated. There was a great deal of nervousness about the place when we arrived. And the thing about being there was that you never were entirely sure where this thing, if you like, in inverted commas, was. And you were never entirely sure if you were going to be one of the unlucky people that contracted this terrible hemorrhagic fever or disease. And the visit to Chernobyl, I think, was very similar to that, because going as a journalist, you have, by nature of the job that you do, to go off the beaten path. So I wasn't entirely comfortable with just staying on the designated routes, and my guide was comfortable to take me to places that perhaps they wouldn't take some of the tourists, and I thought that that was necessary to properly tell the story. But having said that, I wasn't entirely comfortable prior to leaving with going there. And I felt a discomfort for the entire time that I was there, because you're never entirely sure what your dose is. Because I was one of the lucky ones who got a guide who forgot his Geiger counter on the first day, Gareth. So I wasn't exactly sure what the radiation levels were on the first day. And I'm hopefully, cross fingers, they were fine. But as I say, I experienced this discomfort. So, you know, it's not a situation that I would readily put myself in. It's necessary to tell these sorts of stories. But to say that, you know, it would be a lie to say that I was completely comfortable with it.
Good heavens. Sure. Well, what an interesting thing to do. And I'm kind of a little bit jealous. I hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope that you'll have lots of opportunities to share more stories and put up some pictures. Are you allowed to just take photographs, or are they quite restrictive about that too?
You know, they're not particularly restrictive at all, Gareth, all things considered. I mean, I would describe the security arrangements as fairly lax. There are two sort of boomed gates that are manned by some pretty bored-looking security officials from the Ukrainian establishment. You drive on in, and once you're there, you're pretty much left to your own devices. And, you know, people have in the past used drones to capture footage. I think they've clamped down on that a little bit. But as far as taking photos and filming, there were virtually no restrictions in place. So I found that a little surprising. So, yeah, if you are keen on going, you can take as many photos as you like.
Unreal. All right, John. Well, nice to talk to you again, and I hope we'll see more and hear more from you in the next while. Nice to talk to you. There goes John Webb. Isn't that cool?
Very interesting.
I would love to go to Chernobyl. So
I'm happy for John Webb to go for me.
Oh, you're happy for him to do it for you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here's something interesting. This is from Samantha. Samantha says, Chernobyl, I saw a program on the homeless Chernobyl animals that weren't allowed to leave. Apparently hundreds. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And there is a team now specifically of volunteers who've come together to look after the animals of Chernobyl. They're still not allowed to leave the area, but they've gone in and they're doing veterinary care. They're also obviously spaying and neutering all the animals so that they don't breed further.
Wow.
And these animals are actually well pictured and friendly and enjoy being with these volunteers. So it's quite a good story that came out of what was really, really bad.
Very, very cool. got a voicemail, a voice note here quickly. This is...
When I watched Chernobyl, I was thinking, man, I hope it's not a season two because that was horrible. I guess they made such good money they had to make another season. That's why the new accident happened. Or is that just me?
Jean. Jean's talking about an incident that actually happened in Russia just recently.
Yeah, it's certainly not on the scale of Chernobyl.
No. No, and hopefully we never have that kind of problem again. It was very nearly a nuclear winter across much of Western Russia and Eastern Europe. Mm. It could have been absolutely horrendous. We're going to talk to Seymour Brucher in a short while about cruising. Yep, you can go on these phenomenal... I'm going on one on Thursday. I'm so excited about this. It's going to be
epic. Is this how you're going to Italy? Well, I mean, how you're touring.
Starting in Rome for a day or so and then hopping on this ship, which is called the Crystal Serenity. And it's going on this unbelievable itinerary. And this ship goes on trips all over the world. So we'll tell you all about that in a little while, just in case you don't know. And I thought, you know, for a lot of people, they think that either it's too expensive or they don't consider cruising because they think, well, when you go somewhere on holiday, you have to go to a place on the land, stay in a hotel. Cruising is way better. You get on the ship, you unpack your stuff, and then you get to see 10 places.
But also there's the fear of dodgy cruises.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's not the case with these.
The ones that people go on just to drink and party. Yeah. There's no touring involved.
No, sure. We know those, what those
are. Scare the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, no. It scared you because the last one you were on was like that.
Yes.
Now, hi, Seymour.
Morning, Gareth.
Nice to see you, man.
Yes, you too. Thanks for having me.
You ready for this this trip coming up?
Oh, I've been counting down the days, I think, since we chatted about it last year already.
I am so excited about this. So we'll talk in a moment about what the cruises that we're going on, but just by way of example, because there are so many different things that you can do. I mean, you've been in this business for a while now.
Yes.
Everybody knows that tourism and travel has changed an enormous amount. These days, people use the internet. They can research these things. You watch other people's experiences on social media and on YouTube and all the rest of it. But do South Africans get cruising?
So. I think there's still a big misconception around cruising that it's too expensive. You mentioned that just now, that it's potentially boring or not safe. But I think, Gareth, you can attest from your cruise last year.
Sure.
You barely feel that water, you know, on these big ships. You almost don't know you're sailing.
They've got so many stabilizers and things. It's absolutely incredible. You almost want more motion.
Absolutely. So, it's very safe. Look, granted, there could be the odd storm or two, but generally it's very smooth, so you don't get that seasickness. It's fun. The food experience on board is phenomenal, which I think the extra kilo or two every time we put on when we come back.
God, the food. Okay, we'll talk about the food in a minute because that's just a whole different category. But it is no small feat to officially be the largest international cruise line representative in South Africa. Southern Africa.
Africa, correct. And actually Sub-Sahara Africa now. We're doing phenomenally well in Kenya and Nigeria. I've just come back from Kenya. They've just spent $6 million on upgrading the Mombasa Harbor.
Yeah.
So they want to attract also the cruise ships to come there. So it's very exciting times.
So what does it take to reach this? And I mean, who started this? How does it work? How did you get into it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, George Achiropoulos started Cruises International some 28 years ago now. I joined the company a few years ago. I've always been in travel. I've always sold sort of products that I felt South Africans enjoyed. You know, I come from Club Med and those kind of environments. And cruising offers such value for money. And I saw potential. South Africa is still very small in terms of the international cruise market. But just to give you a very interesting stat, there are $69.3 billion worth of cruise ships on order until 2027.
So it's
the fastest growing segment of travel worldwide, and last year it enjoyed 50% growth around the world. There is no industry, there's no one that can say they had that kind of growth last year. It's phenomenal.
Absolutely phenomenal. And in South Africa, Seymour Brucher, by the way, is the sales and marketing manager for Cruises International. So he's the guy you've got to talk to if you want to know about this stuff. And while you're here, tell us why South Africans do and don't get it. You said that they do to some degree. Why don't they?
I think because generally we don't see a lot of cruise ships here. Of course, we've got some of the brands that do the local sailings here, but the very short cruises, the 2 and 3 night cruises, which is quite a different experience to your 1 week cruises in the Caribbean.
Sure, those, they have their place.
Absolutely, so absolutely. So I think they go on a lot of holidays. They go to New York, they go to Dubai, they go to Europe to go ski, but they don't necessarily then think of a cruise as an option, because they just think it's just too much money and those kind of things. Like, they don't want to be restricted. Whereas I think, again, and as you saw, it's not restrictive at all. Every day you can get off the ship, you visit a different country, but at the same time, your room is there. You don't have to pack and unpack, catch all sorts of different flights and transfers. And that, to me, is as soon as South Africans start picking up on that, how easy it actually is to go on a cruise ship and yet you can visit 3-4 different countries in a week.
Oh, man.
And you don't have to be part of a tour group.
Exactly.
Following the
and
flag.
Listen, exactly. I mean, you get different kinds of cruises. We'll talk about some of those in a moment, because you have to explain that there are some that are more family orientated. Yep. There are some that are much more for younger people, some that are much more for older people. But really, on the ship that I went on last year and that we're going on now, you don't even feel like you've got other people around you. That you don't ever feel like you're crowded.
Mm.
Everything you want, you can have. There's no rush. There are no queues. It's very smooth. I mean, the whole thing is just unbelievably well managed from the point of view of people.
Yeah.
And there's staff everywhere running around to look after you in whichever way you want to be looked after.
Definitely.
I need this, I need that.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. Anything you want.
To your point, I mean, the brand you were on is Crystal, and Crystal is categorized as one of the luxury brands. And the difference with the luxury ships is that you have a fairly large ship, which is very similar in size to a lot of the other ships that are out there, yet it only takes 970 passengers. A similar ship sized with a competitor product, you're probably looking at between 2,500 and 3,000 passengers.
Wow.
for the same size. And that's exactly where your point
really
comes
shippy.
In. So you've got all that space. You have all of that space, yet the ship is big enough for you to have your little areas that you go to without the crowds. You don't fight for a towel or a deck chair at the pool area.
No.
You don't ever queue for your food. And you've got almost 700 staff looking after you, which is a phenomenal guest to staff ratio. So it is that attention to detail.
And they go all over the world?
They go all over the world. That's the thing with cruising. Some destinations that aren't as accessible in terms of a normal holiday, you can do with a cruise ship. Alaska, Patagonia, Galapagos Islands,
wow.
You know, the Great Barrier Reef, any of those kind of destinations you can visit.
That's phenomenal. How many of these have you been on?
I've been on about 5 or 6 cruises, which has been a phenomenal honor and pleasure to be on and experience. Mm. I've been lucky to do the Caribbean, which is, it's a dream, you know, seeing just all of these different beaches and the cultures. It's absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, I've been very lucky.
All right, so what about the more family-orientated cruises? And some of these ships are enormous. They are like cities.
They are indeed floating cities. We're very proud to officially represent Royal Caribbean and Sub-Saharan Africa.
Are they the biggest guys?
They are basically
in terms of the size of ship and everything.
Size of ship, and in terms of the cruise market share worldwide, Royal Caribbean is number one by far.
Really?
They are the market leader. They've been the most innovative cruise brand since day one. They've always been the first to start things on their ships, whether it's an ice rink, whether it's a surf simulator, whether it's a zip line. They've always been the first. And I mean, I was on two of their large ships last year, and you know, they take 5,500, 6,000 people. So it's a lot of people. And initially, it's this almost this mind freeze, because you see this ship and you don't believe it can actually sail. It's so big.
Yeah.
And there's so many people queuing to get in. But once you get on, everyone spreads out and finds, again, their preferred area of the ship. Because
how many decks on a ship like that?
13 decks. 13 decks. But, you know, for the families, what a holiday, because the parents can enjoy a bit of sunshine or having a few cocktails while the kids are learning how to surf, going on a zip line, rock climbing, going down the ultimate abyss, which is the walls. It's the tallest, basically, slide inside any cruise ship. It drops almost 13 stories.
Oh.
So the parents actually have a relaxing holidays because the kids go and do all of these activities, and you basically almost don't see the children for a week. So it's a phenomenal holiday for families.
All right, let's talk about the food for a second, because I think, again, a lot of people have these misconceptions that on a cruise liner, you've got these buffet dinners that are all
mass catered.
Yeah, mass catered, and that's not the case, especially not on something like Crystal.
Definitely not. If you look at our luxury brands, most of the food available on board is equal to, if not better than, Michelin star restaurants. However, you're not allowed to be Michelin star graded on the ocean,
yeah,
because the kitchen sizes are smaller and all that kind of things, right, like that. So the food experience is absolutely phenomenal. And a brand like Crystal partners with MasterChef Nobu. So if any of you are familiar with the one and only down, sure, in Cape Town, mm-hmm, there's the Nobu restaurant there. Not cheap, might I add. Mm-hmm. But that's available free of charge for you to eat on a brand like Crystal. And again, probably I'm not a big fish eater, but the food there is just, you want to eat the sushi. You want to eat that kidding? Tuna.
I'm not a foodie. Mm. And yet I've found it's like a taste exploration.
It definitely is. And the cruise liners pay a lot of attention to the food experience, and your luxury brands, the food is fresh. It's almost daily when they're in port, they get fresh food brought onto the ship. So it's not a case of food that's been on board for 2-3 weeks in fridges. It's fresh. It's cooked there on board. And that's a real big difference. Even a brand like Royal Caribbean, even the ships that take these 5,500, 6,000 people, you are shocked at the quality of the food. They put such a lot of emphasis and money behind the food experience. It's very, very important.
We met a lot of the people who work on the ship when we were on last year, and they have, I mean, the logistics of running a thing like this, the hospitality, the hotel, because it's a hotel, right?
Yeah.
You have to make sure that there's fresh linen in the rooms.
Your daily to-do list is big.
It's big. and the staff complement is enormous on these ships too, right?
Yeah, it is. It really, really is. And I mean, it's almost, there's a secret world in these ships that you don't see, you don't think about. The crew deck is massive. And, you know, even the crew has their own restaurants, their own bars, their own entertainment areas. But you never see any of that. And there's literally, I mean, on the big royal ships, you have 2,500 crew that works on there. But again, they love, you mentioned South Africans. The cruise liners love South Africans.
Cause lots of South Africans.
There are a lot of South Africans. Oh. The exchange rate.
Yes.
It's very favorable for us to go work on the ships earning US dollars.
Sure.
But South Africans work hard and party hard. Mm-hmm. They really, really do. And more importantly, they work hard. And the cruise brands love that because the South Africans work very hard. And that's why you'll see mostly the South Africans working bar, working restaurants. And again, because I think South Africans, they love to eat and love to drink. So it kind of makes sense that they would work in those kind of areas of the ships.
The rooms are amazing. Even the rooms that are like entry level compared to the ones that go all the way up to these suites where you've got like it's basically a hotel suite with a balcony.
Don't look at those ones first.
No, but even the ones,
to look at the ones in the middle.
Even the cheapest ones you get on these cruise liners are better than most hotel rooms I've ever been in.
Correct. I mean, if you just think of a Formula One or a Road Lodge or a City Lodge, your more entry level kind of properties here in South Africa. I'm yet to see something like that on one of these cruise ships.
You don't get that.
So the quality of the rooms are large. Yeah. South Africans like large rooms. Our hotels in South Africa, the rooms tend to be a bit larger than overseas.
Right.
And the cruise ships do provide that. And often you just pay a little bit more and you get a balcony. And it makes all the difference, you know, when you're out in the middle of the ocean. Mm. And that sort of that fresh breeze and the ability for you to open your window.
I just left my door open, and then you'd hear the ocean and you feel that gentle rocking when you go to sleep at night.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, it's superb.
Incredible feeling. Incredible.
Then, of course, you get off and on because you go on these tour excursions onto the land.
Yep.
That's just spectacular, too, because you get to see these really just places you wouldn't normally go to.
Correct. And especially with your slightly smaller ships, a brand like Crystal, which you are going on at the end of the week, the ships are smaller, which means they can go to these slightly smaller destinations where the large ships can't go to. And that's all about exploration. It's about exploring these towns that you wouldn't necessarily fly to with a plane. You wouldn't even think of going to a Portofino or a Florence. You wouldn't think of jumping on a plane and going there. Yet the cruise ship enables you to go visit these incredible little cities with, again, you get off very quickly. The ship, there's no queues, there's no kind of things like that. You get to explore at your own pace or do a tour that's provided by the ship. And then again, come back in the evening, your room's there, no packing, unpacking, and you've had a phenomenal day out.
Well, I got to see last year Lisbon, Barcelona, a little French port called Cassis, which is just magnificent. It's like a picture postcard. And then Monte Carlo.
I'll never forget Monte Carlo, Gareth, that fireworks display.
Yeah, so we didn't even know this, but when we pulled into Monte Carlo, they were having the World Firework Championship.
Wow.
And they had the most incredible fireworks display, which we got to see from the best vantage point possible.
We were literally at the bar at the front of the ship on that outside deck. And I even remember the cocktail in our hands. It was that one of those gins.
Yeah.
Because they've got this phenomenal gin menu with about 21, 22 different gins on the menu. And we were having that while watching this fireworks display. It was incredible.
All right. So how are we going to stop ourselves from being fat at the end of this trip?
Huh? Well, the nice thing is beautiful. On deck five, you can run all the way around the ship on the beautiful running track. Yeah. I mean, I think if you measure it, it's probably almost a kilometer long by the time you go around. So you just need to do a few of those every morning.
Well, because Seymour, I've already told Gareth he should just accept that at the end of this, he'll have to unbutton. He'll just have to walk around with unbuttoned pants.
Sometimes you just have to accept defeat and just go and enjoy yourself. Mm.
But they have a gym on board.
A beautiful gym, might I add. I mean, that gym rivals quite a lot of the local gyms you see in terms of the equipment sometimes, if not better. And they have instructors on board, so you know they've got a nice wellness program also.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can be diligent.
Oh, sure.
No, you can.
No, Sia. and the bars, Sia. Sia would love these cocktails. They look like...
No, all I heard was like, what's 21 cocktails?
Well, they have it's a gin cocktail that Crystal's got. And I think there's 21 or 22 gins available on that cocktail. And the whole cocktail is just gins. It's phenomenal.
By the way, they've also got loads of entertainment. I mean, it's not like you get on board and then you have to entertain yourself.
No.
Not that that's difficult. I mean, a lot of people just want to be at the pool. Mm, a lot of people.
Correct. Time out.
Yeah.
Correct.
But there's stuff going on all the time.
There is. But the nice thing with that is do as little or as much as you want. Yeah. That's the nice thing. Yeah. Nothing's forced upon you. There's a schedule that's available on your app when you log on to the Wi-Fi. Alternatively, there's almost a newspaper type of thing that they deliver
to
you
every day.
By the way,
they have Wi-Fi everywhere.
Literally everywhere, whether you're in the pool.
You're always connected as well.
Correct. So much entertainment. I mean, you can go watch a movie at the Hollywood Theater on board Crystal, grab some popcorn, watch the latest Hollywood releases. Mm-hmm. Or if you want something a little bit more old school, they show some of the old James Dean movies and those kind of things like that. Uh-huh. And again, you wouldn't think you're in the middle of the ocean on a cruise ship. And again, if you go to our more family orientated brands like a Royal Caribbean, you know, you've got things like ice rinks. If you feel like going and having a bit of a skate in the middle of the Caribbean Ocean, you can go do that. So there's so much entertainment. So
obviously, people now, you've definitely whet some appetites, but how expensive are these cruises?
They're really not that expensive. If you look at a brand like Royal Caribbean, you can literally start looking at a price of about $100 a day per person.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got Dubai sailings now in December, and you're looking at literally $700-$800 per person for the week. So a phenomenal value for money. Compare
that's amazing.
If you just go to Dubai to a 4 or 5-star hotel, you're probably looking at $2,000 a day, which is closer to $200 per person per day. And then you don't have all these entertainment things you can go and do. You'd have to jump in a taxi to go watch a show. You'd have to go jump in a taxi to go to the beach, whatever it might be. Those are all costs and time, but all of that's on board the ship for you. During the day, you can get off and go and experience a different city. So a phenomenal value for money. And even the luxury brands, like a Crystal, you'd think to yourself, completely unreachable. But they have fares starting from about $3,000 per person for the week. And we're talking 6-star, all your meals, all your drinks. Not just drinks, premium drinks. Everything included. Again, compare that to a 5-star in Mauritius these days, which costs you easy $40,000, $45,000 per person. And then you're stuck on one island, basically. Mm.
Sure.
I'm just blown away by this. It really is for me a discovery and something that I'm really happy I found out about it now, because there's nothing worse than waiting until you're 70 or 80 to figure out the best way to travel. And there's a good reason that all those really smart, really rich people end up doing that for their holidays.
Correct. Absolutely.
They can't all be wrong and rich and brilliant.
No, I mean, 30 million Americans can't be wrong. They go cruising every year and growing fast. So,
So, okay, one quick thing about you that I'd like to just touch on is Seymour is also a brilliant wildlife photographer.
Oh,
really?
You don't know this about him.
I'm sure there's lots of wildlife that comes out at night on these shows.
You know what they say?
That's one way to look at it, Leanne.
What happens on the ship stays on the ship.
No, but hang on. Just talk about your photography for a moment, because it's quite extraordinary. I mean, I follow you on Instagram. And he takes the most beautiful pictures. You must sit for hours waiting for the right picture.
Yeah, thank you, Gareth. Shame, kind words. I just, from a young age...
No, not kind. This is something you do. It's professional.
The first time I went to the Kruger, I was just obsessed with nature and the pureness of nature. Because to me, nature is pure. Nothing doesn't happen for a reason in nature. Unless, unlike our humans, they do everything for a reason. And I I enjoy the challenge of sitting at a waterhole in 40 degree heat in the Kalahari, waiting for hours, sweating, needing the bathroom. And then eventually you get rewarded, you know, a lion or a leopard comes and drinks in front of you. But there's no one else around because everyone else is driven away because they don't have the patience. I absolutely love that challenge, and I love just being out in the bush. So basically, if I'm not working, I'm in the bush. You know, I'm going to Kenya, I'm going to Botswana, I'm going to Namibia.
Yeah, our shame. And your work means that you make other people happy all the time by giving them these great holidays. Okay, so go and follow him on Instagram because if you like, particularly if you like wildlife photography, this is really just incredible. S-E-Y-M-S Seems _ Brugge, B-R-U-G-G-E-R. So his name is Seymour Brugge, but you can go and find Seems Brugge, which is on Instagram, and you can see all his wildlife photography. It's really impressive.
Very cool.
Yeah,
thank you.
I figured that out when we were talking on the ship last time. All right, so this is going to be exciting. So we're doing Rome. We're doing, what's this itinerary? Come on.
Oh wow,
you know it's heart.
It's actually one of the few itineraries that Crystal does that is starts in Rome and ends in Rome, because normally Crystal starts in a port and ends in a different port. So this is one of the very, very odd ones that comes back to Rome. But in saying that, the sailing is 100% full now. It's full. Which is exciting. So it shows you that worldwide there could be this economic downturn, and yet these ships are full. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're doing Rome, we're doing Portofino, we're doing Florence, we're doing Monte Carlo again, and we're also doing Saint-Tropez, which I haven't been to Saint-Tropez. I've traveled a lot. So I'm very excited to go see Saint-Tropez. Mm. It looks really beautiful. But I'm also particularly excited with Florence. I've heard so many great things about it, so I'm definitely going to go experience a little bit of Florence. So, yeah, phenomenal sort of Italian and French itinerary. Again, exploration, these little towns that you probably wouldn't go to, because you'd probably go to Rome, you'd go to Venice, you'd go to the big cities if you were flying.
Portofino looks so beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And that's what it's about, it's exploration.
Unreal.
It's all about exploration, and especially a brand like Crystal. Clients want to explore the world, and these ships enable you to do that.
Man, I'm excited. Okay, this is my this is my birthday present.
Look at that.
Now you celebrate in style.
This is why I don't need a fuss made here in the office. Yeah. All right, superb. Thank you, Seymour.
Thank you so much, Gareth.
Yes, if you want to find out more, you can always find out more by looking up Cruises International. They're a South African company. They can connect you up with any of the cruise lines all over the world. The best possible experiences you can give to yourself and your family. And do it today, because you will be sorry if you don't. It's really the most incredible way to spend your hard-earned vacation money. And by the way, while we're talking about money, how should you be thinking about cryptocurrencies, and why should you be allocating some of your portfolio to them? Well, you can find out in the final episode of Beyond Bitcoin, which is brought to you by Revix, a revolutionary new cryptocurrency investment platform. They make it safe and easy for South Africans to invest in cryptocurrencies. I have, and some of the other people who listen to us have, and all of them are sitting there with cryptocurrency investments now that they might not have had if they hadn't checked out Revix.com. Go and see them, and you can find out more by going to their website. They've got all the info there. You can also email them. Just speak to Sean or to Louis directly. You might have heard them on the show.
Brother Louis.
That's it. Ask either of them any questions that you want answers to, and they will be happy to help you. They're really cool guys. Started this business earlier this year, and already it has taken off and is doing very, very well. So there we go. Busy morning, huh?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I just want to quickly go to some of the things that Leanne had on her agenda, because I think they might be important for us this morning.
Well, we were talking about fake news.
Fake news.
That's definitely been a theme of the morning.
Right.
What's going on in the Amazon, etc. There's a hoax that's been going around with a woman in the U.S. who posted some pictures online of a dog, which she said she found on the side of the road in Ohio, with her snout duct taped shut and her throat cut.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I see these pictures, I tend to not even want to read the article.
Yeah.
But the fact that this was labeled a hoax made me read further. Turns out it was this woman's own dog. And
oh, come on now.
She had had, the dog had run into some barbed wire and injured its throat, which is why in the images the throat is shaved. But where she reckoned that there was duct tape around the muzzle, that was actually from a muzzle that was used to stop the dog from licking its wounds and from eating and destroying furniture. So she went and made a public plea to say, I found this dog on the side of the road, raising money so that we can look after it. Please help pay for its vet fees. Let's find it a good home.
Meanwhile, it was her dog.
It was her dog.
What a nasty piece of work. Right?
How disgusting.
What a dreadful person, right?
Yeah. I mean, besides it being a dreadful thing, there is still obviously animal abuse here because she hasn't been looking after this animal well enough. But she tried to unbelievably and disgustingly get money off of Facebook to pay for these vet bills.
Oh, my God. What a horrible person. Why, what is wrong with people that they would do this? Just because they want money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that you do this to the poor animal.
Anyway, the Butler County community has made sure that
I hope she goes to
the
jail.
Dog does not return to her original owner.
I really hope she goes to jail. What an awful person. Ugh. All right, what else is going on?
Well, Placido Domingo.
Oh, shame. Yes. Yeah, the one of the three tenors, he's been called very handsy recently, and he was one of the guys most recently outed by the whole Me Too movement.
It seems like people are moving on, and they aren't taking these allegations seriously. For some context, this is following 9 different women who are accusing him of some form of harassment. Well, he has had his first performance after being accused of sexually harassing women this past weekend. So on Sunday, he performed. It was a full house. So this whole cancel culture thing didn't happen.
Good.
It was a full house and people stood and he had a standing ovation right at the end of the show.
Good.
All of the reports were positive. And by the way, the verdict still is out whether these allegations are true or false, but it seems like the general consensus around the story for now in the court of public opinion is that no one is taking it seriously.
There's so much time. Again, truth serum. We spend so much time in courts and investigating and money trying to figure shit out.
Yeah, exactly. For what?
Wow.
And you know, this is also, as we discussed the other day, it's a result of this Me Too thing just getting hopelessly out of control and people crying wolf and actually damaging the case that real victims have.
Absolutely.
Well, we do have to look at the other side of the scale, though. If I was one of the women and if something did actually happen, I'd be pissed off that no one is hearing me out, no one is taking this seriously. I mean, yeah, they're still supporting him and let me not get involved in that, but come on now, like, can I get some sort of assistance here? These are 8 singers and a dancer who earlier this month have spoken out about their sexual harassment, allegedly by the former member of the Three Tenors. And some of the incidences actually date back to the early 1980s.
Sure.
When things were very different, might I say.
Thank you for pointing that out. Because
I really have to.
People tend to look back and think they can apply today's morality and today's ideas to a former time.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You just cannot do that. It is deeply myopic and pointless for you to live your life imagining that everyone who came before you thought the way that you did.
We cannot apply today's morals and principles to the past, myself included. I could have cried rape for many things. I could have cried sexual abuse from bosses, from co-workers.
Right.
But it was a different time and a different culture.
And that's not to excuse the behavior.
It's not to be accepted for that.
No, sure.
But we do need to take this into consideration.
It's all about context.
Yeah.
You've got to have some idea of the perspective of the time. And of course, that does not in any way take away from the fact that there are people who are genuine victims. And I'm proud of women who are standing up for themselves.
Absolutely.
Down, doing
you know
the right
who agrees
thing.
With that?
Who?
Hashtag Me Too.
Oh. All right, that's all we got time for. Thank you, everybody. Be good. We'll catch you tomorrow. Between 6 and 8 o'clock.
You had to think about that for
a
moment.
I had to give it some
same
serious
time
thought.
Every day.
Sure, I know. Same time every day, but I'm still a moron.
This is CliffCentral.com.